Good afternoon. This is a podcast runs through it. I am Nelson King here with Dixie Hart. Hey, Dixie.
Hello, Nelson.
And today we have something special. At least from our perspective, it's special. And I think for most people in Montana, it would be. We're going to be interviewing our sitting senator, John Tester. And at this point, we're almost exactly, we are 4 weeks away from the election. And there are a few things happening in the world. And I think it's a good time to get Senator Tester on here and ask him what he thinks is happening to the election. And we're going to talk briefly, but about his new book, which is called Grounded, A Senator's Lesson on Winning Back Rural America. And there's a lot of interesting things in the book, and I think we will have a chance to ask him about some of them. Tester's had a long and interesting life, even though he's a relatively young man, as a politician goes. So today we've got an interesting conversation coming up with Senator Tester, and an interesting political environment to talk about. And so let's move on and talk to Senator Tester. Okay, it's a beautiful, windy day in Livingston, Montana, which, no surprise. And our guest this afternoon is the Honorable Senator John Tester. Good day to you, sir.
It's good to be with you, and just to let you know that you're not alone. It's windy in north central Montana, too.
Yeah, well, it's getting to be fall, and I had to tell somebody yesterday I'm setting in stuff because winter's coming. But we also have an election coming, and we wanted to talk to you today to start with about your I guess you can say, new book, right? I mean, it came out when, in August?
September? No, it came out September 15th, so it's still relatively new.
It's a new book. It's called Grounded, and we won't, unfortunately, we don't have time to, you know, make an entire interview about the book, which I would love to do, because there's a lot of information in it. Anybody who's interested in history, specifically Montana history, but just history in general, would find it a gold mine. Your life has been very interesting from a lot of different perspectives, not to mention that you've been a senator for many, many years. So you have a life full of, chock full of interesting things, and it's a very interesting book to read, and it's well written as well. I actually managed, I read it cover to cover, and really enjoyed it.
Well, that's I appreciate that. That's good. And I don't know, it's interesting that you get a little older and you start to reflect back on some of the things that happen in life and how they influence what you do later in life. And that's pretty much what we did and what we talked about and so I'm glad you enjoyed it, Nelson.
It's good. Well, I did. It's an autobiography, I would say, right? I mean, primarily.
Yeah, it is autobiographical with some advice for folks out there who may be running for office or who live in rural America or wherever it might be.
Yeah, one of the central themes, I think, if you want to put it this way, is that it has that question that I think a lot of people ask is, how could a Democrat win in so red a state as Montana, right? And you make it very clear, I think, the way to do it, you know?
There's no magic. I mean, it's hard work and it's authenticity and it's having two ears and one mouth and listening and a number of other things, but those are probably three of the biggies.
Well, I thought I'd just take the liberty here reading a paragraph from the book, because I think it would set maybe people's minds about the character of the book, the quality of it. It's right from chapter one, Grit, Glue, and a Meat Grinder, which is a long story in its own right. But let me just read this. It'll only take up a minute or two. This is from the book, from the chapter. It tells a lot of stories about your early life and what your background was on the farm and so forth. But anyway, this is just one paragraph. It starts, the cyclone also toppled the farm's 50-foot iron frame windmill. That windmill fell right on top of Uncle Lloyd, pinning him to the ground and knocking him out cold. Lloyd didn't wake up for weeks, but he miraculously survived. Oh, and by the way, Uncle Lloyd lived another 7 decades, and he farmed the family land for most of his years. Granddad put up that old iron windmill back up when he rebuilt the barn in 1916. Both are still standing today, not far from the butcher shop where I still use the same meat grinder that took my fingers. There's nothing wrong with the grinder. I have too much skin in the game to throw it out. I think that kind of sums up, in a way, rural life and you and your approach to things. Maybe you disagree with that, but
No, I don't. I mean, I think that that whole segment there, I think, speaks to a number of things that impact rural America. First of all, that weather patterns, which if you're in agriculture, you know how important they are to have some sort of predictability there. And that old windmill blew down then and hasn't blown down since. So the weather patterns were such then that weren't too conducive to it. But it was also about survival. And, you know, in a time where healthcare in the mid-teens was not anything like it was today. And I'm sure there were times when my grandparents thought Uncle Lloyd wasn't going to make it, but he did. Shows you the kind of, stick-to-itness, we'll call it, that they had then, back then, in that day. And then, of course, from a meat grinder perspective, that meat grinder in 1966 was literally brand new, and it's ground many, many, many pounds of hamburger over the last 50 years or so, and it's still doing it to this day, and so might as well keep on going.
Yeah, for me, it kind of symbolized your ability to take whatever life throws at you and just keep on trucking, do what you need to do. Like you say, it wasn't a meat grinder. It was fine.
Yeah, no, exactly right. No. That's right. It teaches you never to get in a fight with power equipment because it never comes out.
Yeah. So the book has a lot of information about not only your life, but, you know, how to conduct politics. And from a lot of people's perspective, I think the epilogue has a, I don't know what you call it, but you talk to Democrats and you talk to Republicans and you talk to everybody and you try to lay down some things that you think are important. And I think maybe the whole book really says, you, John Tester, are from rural country, you're a farmer. And you think that, you know, overall, given the importance of agriculture and the rural areas in the United States, it doesn't get enough attention. And the Democrats in particular have not been very good at listening to the rural areas. And I'm wondering, I'm just going to ask you right now, do you think that rural people still believe in what Trump and the Republicans are saying? Or have the Democrats given them a reason to vote for Democrats?
Look, I would say this. I think that... the majority of my neighbors are probably still going to vote for Donald Trump, although there are some things that have happened in the last month or so that would make me question whether that's the case. I mean, I think the issues that revolve around his taxes, the issues of calling the greatest generation that liberated Europe suckers and losers, those kind of things don't sell in rural America. I mean, they just don't. I don't think they sell anywhere, quite frankly. But for whatever reasons, I think that they're still going to vote for him. I do think that if you're going to make inroads in rural America, it can't be done just in an election year. It has to be done every year. You have to have folks out there talking in rural America, whether you're running for the U.S. Senate, governor, House of Representatives in Montana, at least, because it's a statewide seat, too, or the president of the United States. Or people running for that position, talking to rural America and talking about what their vision is. And think challenges in rural America are different than urban America. And so I think that there's opportunity out there for folks to really, really make some inroads because the message is a bit different.
Mm-hmm. But I would expect that, you know, the economy, healthcare, these are issues that everywhere and would also apply in the rural areas.
Yeah, and I think they're only amplified in rural America. I think healthcare, because of the distance and accessibility, healthcare is only amplified in rural America. It's only a bigger issue here than it is anywhere else, I think, because in my particular case, I'm 13, 14 miles away from the hospital in our little town. If that were to close, my nearest hospital would be 50 miles away. So it becomes a real problem.
Yep. Yeah, and well, the two are linked. I mean, having healthcare, as you mentioned in the book several times, that, you know, if you didn't have healthcare and you got really sick or had a very bad injury, you couldn't afford it without, you know, some kind of decent healthcare.
That's exactly right. And then on the delivery side, if you don't have those small rural hospitals that are scattered around this state and around this country, and you get over the age of 50 because of pre-existing conditions, oftentimes people wouldn't be able to even live in rural America. They'd have to move closer to a hospital because that golden hour is so very, very important in healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, all of this is kind of like a teaser for your book. I want to stress to people that it really is full of a lot of really good information, not to mention your background and where you're coming from, and a pretty remarkable story in its own right.
I appreciate that.
So moving on, I guess, to, you know, where we are right now, where, as somebody said to me, I think it was Al Franken, he was talking about it. He said, oh, yeah, by the way, we're in the middle of an election. And as if it was kind of hard to pick that out, but maybe you can talk from your perspective. I mean, you're a sitting senator and you got, what, 4 more years to go before you have to go through this grinder again, pardon the expression. And where do you think we're at? What's at stake in this election for Montana?
Well, I think there's a lot at stake, not only for Montana, but the whole country. As I look at a president who has pushed away our traditional allies that have been our allies since World War II, and how he has embraced leaders like Putin and Kim Jong-un and Erdogan, who are dictators, it has me worried. As I look at going into trade wars with China, and most people would tell you we need to hold China accountable, but people who know the issue would also tell you that it's going to be very, very hard for the United States alone to hold China accountable. And that's what the president has gone into a trade war with China alone, because our allies have been pushed away. Look, China's done bad things to us. It's done bad things to our allies, too. It would have been nice to have them on board, because then I think we could have really held China accountable. As it is, I think this trade war has only empowered them. So from an international standpoint, those are a couple things that really bother me. I think that we've taken our eye totally off the Middle East, and maybe that's for good reason. I've never been a big fan of the Iraq war, for sure, but the truth is that a lot of men and women gave their lives over there, and just to walk away and let Russia do whatever they want, I think is contrary to our national security interests. I think if you take a look at healthcare and the president who's in court right now trying to take away the Affordable Care Act, and with it pre-existing conditions and lifetime caps. And you know what? I mean, this is the other thing. I get a kick out of people who stand up on TV and say, well, you know, I'm for making sure people with pre-existing conditions have coverage. Well, the problem is you voted to strip it and you haven't put forth anything that will replace it. And now we have a president who's in court trying to take away the Affordable Care Act and take away all those benefits that the Affordable Care Act did, including the 90,000 folks that the governor got covered through Medicaid expansion. The governor working with the legislature is a more proper way to say it. So in the way of health care, I'm very, very worried. Agriculturally, there's way, way, way too much consolidation in the marketplace, both on the input side and when we sell our products. And quite frankly, we continue to see rural communities dry up and blow away. and there's no efforts for an infrastructure bill. And quite frankly, without good infrastructure and without competitive marketplaces, then production agriculture is in trouble. And then you take a look at what's going on with public education and how that's trying to be undermined and privatized and voucherized at the federal level. So, look, there's a lot at stake in this election, and leadership does make a difference. And that's not even getting into the events that happened in the last week with the president catching COVID and then coming out in from what I've seen, the interviews I've seen, trying to downplay it as much as possible. So there's a lot at stake, and that's why you'll hear most people say this is the most important election in their lifetime. And I would say that it's the most important election in my lifetime. And it's why people need to get out and get registered and vote. And it's part of the deal. And my folks always said you can't complain if you don't vote. And I believe that too. So there's a lot at stake here, Nelson. There's a lot at stake.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe it wasn't, well, your mother was really engaged in following politics.
Very much so. My mother and my grandmother both were very, 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 very in tune with what was going on in the nation politically.
But back in the day, they, you know, being women, they were lucky they could vote then, which they could, but barely. They could hardly.
Well, my grandmother did not have that right her whole life, but certainly she did have it for a good portion of it, for sure.
Well, I got to bring it up because it's when you talk about what's at stake here, it's hard to tell people that, you know, yeah, democracy is at stake here. And that is just words, you know, as far as people are concerned. But I mean, what you say and keep reiterating is there are a lot of really important issues here. Is there any issue in Montana that sticks in your mind as the most important or that people bring up the most?
Well, I mean, it's healthcare. I mean, healthcare is the number one issue and has been the number one issue in Montana for some time. There's a number of reasons for it. We touched on it a little bit earlier. These rural hospitals are at risk of closure. If you go talk to them, they will tell you that. If they see a lot more unpaid bills because Medicaid expansion is done away with, they in fact could close. And I think we would see a number of them close. So that's a big problem from an access standpoint. Affordability is always a huge issue. And healthcare, if it's not affordable, it's not accessible. And so making sure we have healthcare that's affordable is also very, very, very important moving forward. But I would say healthcare is probably the number one issue that's facing the state of Montana and probably facing the country too in this election. Although I will tell you, from 30,000 feet, the democracy is at risk. There's no doubt about that. And quite frankly, I've said for a long time now, the president thinks that Congress is a nuisance. He would like to do away with them and just do whatever he wants. But that's not the way it's supposed to work. We have checks and balances. They haven't worked very well up to now, but the truth is that I think they will work. It's not a problem with the construction. It's a problem with the people who serve in the bodies.
Yep. I'd like to move a little bit on to them talking about the, you know, the Democratic slate, the candidates here in Montana. We've been fortunate to, at a podcast run through it, we've interviewed all of them, and people can go to our website and listen to those interviews. And just, you know, from our perspective, I think this is a terrific group of Democrats. A lot of younger people and people that have a lot of experience in the legislature. What's your take on the Democratic slate and what's happening to them now?
Well, I mean, I agree with you 100%. As you go down the list, there are some incredibly talented folks from Governor Bullock running for the U.S. Senate to Mike Cooney, a guy that I worked with when I was in the state legislature, who's running for governor. To Kathleen Williams, who I will tell you that running for the House is the hardest job in Montana politics because you got to run every 2 years. And she ran in 18 and she's doing it again. And I think she's doing a pretty good job, and hopefully she will be able to be successful, as with the other two too. And then as you go down the ballot, we've just got a number of people who are incredibly smart and incredibly visionary. And I think that if the Tier B candidates have a lot tougher time getting air when there's so many ads on TV for the Senate, the governor, and the House race. But I think they're doing a pretty good job. I'm seeing signs around the state, Bennett and Morgeau and all of them. I mean, all the folks who are running. And I think that helps. I think they're getting out to the communities and talking to the folks. I think that helps. So it's a good slate, and it's a slate of candidates that I think will do a good job if they're able to win this election.
Yeah, we not only agree with you, we've been trying to push people to think about the entire state budget, state slate, because there are a lot of different races, and many times people will come in. Oh, auditor, I have no idea what he does. Who's running? Those kind of questions, and people need to answer that and be ready to vote.
Yeah, I agree 100%. In some respects, these Tier B races are as important, or even in some cases more important than the ones that you rank above them, because they really do deal with, Superintendent of Public Education deals with education. They deal with issues that impact your local school district. The state auditor deals with issues that revolve around insurance. So if you have problems, whether it's with property and casualty or whether it's health insurance, that's who you pick up. And it's much easier to deal with somebody at the state level than it is the federal level. And by the way, I might add, there's been plenty of folks who want to take insurance regulation to the federal level. And the reason I have pushed back on that is because you have the opportunity to call up your state auditor if you have a problem in Montana with an insurance company that does business in Montana. And I think that's a positive thing. And the list goes on. I mean, I think that there's the attorney general is the state's attorney. And quite frankly, it's an incredibly important position. And we've got incredibly good people running. Good person running in that position, so it's good.
Yeah, we really like Ralph Grabel, who's running for the Attorney General position, and he's just a representative, I think, of the rest of them. Really smart people with a lot of background. We're trying to convince people that they need to spend some time to learn about these candidates, and be sure they actually vote for them.
In Ray's particular case, I don't know that I, in my time in politics, have met anybody that's any more talented of a speaker or an attorney that's running for public office. He's an incredible talent.
Yep.
And really, really, really a good, honest citizen who will do an amazing job as Attorney General, representing everybody.
Well, we're positive there. And although, we're obviously a progressive group. But this year, quite frankly, having looked at the Republican lineup, first of all, it's the usual thing where there's an awful lot of wealthy business people getting in because they can. But we also feel like there are agendas in the Republican side which are, scary. What word do you want to use for them?
I vote for terrifying. I think that's a good description.
Well, Dixie's probably right. I mean, the truth is that there are a lot of, they're selling off our public land.
Right.
It's still in the Republican platform. They haven't changed it from years past when they've had it in. Selling off our public lands would be a huge mistake. And once they're sold, you'd never get them back. And I can tell you that, that stuff isn't in the platforms if the leaders of their party, the Daineses, the Gianfortes, in particular, stand up and say, we want it out. It's in because they allowed it to stay in. And I think that's just one of many agendas that's out there. I think privatization of schools, particularly
right,
amongst Daines and Gianforte, are two other issues that they'd love to see happen. Public education is the foundation of this democracy. And to privatize it would be the first step in destroying this democracy. I'm getting a call from the Montana Republicans right now. We'll try to let that go. There you go.
How did that happen?
They probably wanted to poll me or something. I don't know.
Anyway, yeah, obviously there's a ton of things we could talk about, but I think you brought up a really important one, which is the condition of our public schools and the fact that the Republican candidate is not really interested in public schools. She's much more interested in private schools. And so the story goes up and down the slate. So we're asking people to really take a good look at the Republican candidates and keep in mind that, at least from our perspective, they are almost always, we have an alternative agenda, which they're not talking about.
Right. And, women's health issues, I think, is something that's definitely in jeopardy.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, I think that with the appointment of the Supreme Court Justice to take Ruth Bader Ginsburg's spot, it is something that people are going to have to stand up and make sure their voices are heard on, or quite frankly, it'll go back to the way it was in the 1950s.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
Exactly. And with allies in the states that'll, back them up, or it's a pretty scary thought.
Yeah.
It for sure is. That's for sure.
Yeah. Coming back to one of the central things that throughout your career as a politician, I think mostly the Democrats have had control of the governorship, pretty much.
When I first got elected in 98, Mark Roscoe was governor, had an opportunity my first 2 years in the state Senate to work with Mark Roscoe, and have had a number of times to work with him on other issues since he's gotten out of the Bush administration. Since that administration's moved on, but the truth is that it's a different Republican Party today than it was 20 years ago.
Right.
And I will tell you that I think that if you're an old style Republican, I think you have a hard time recognizing what this party really stands for. And just let me give you an example. I talked about it earlier, but who would have ever thought that the Republican president would be in bed with the president from Russia? Who would have ever thought that we'd have a president that would be bad-mouthing our military? Who would have ever thought that when Russia put a bounty on our soldiers, that a Republican president would do nothing about it and let it go? I mean, this is the kind of stuff that doesn't make sense to me, that the Republican Party used to stand for, that doesn't anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're also, I would say in the last, two or three cycles at least, the having a Democratic governor to basically stop the crazy legislation coming from the Republicans, it was crucial. I mean, just imagine if we didn't have that. I wish people could read through the list of things, the legislation that the Republicans have put up in the last 1, 2, 3, 4 sessions of the legislature, and all that Bullock and other Democratic governors have done to make sure the craziness didn't come through.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's true. And Montana, I mean, you put a guy from New Jersey in charge of the state, and it's probably going to start looking more like New Jersey than Montana.
Right. Well, and then there's also the land board. I think it's really critical that a Democratic governor be in position. Hopefully we'll end up with a majority on the land board of the Democratic candidates, but boy, God help us in public lands if the Republicans take that over.
Yeah, it's a big concern, and it's for the economy. The public lands are so critically important to our economy, and it's $7 billion, over 70,000 jobs, affects Main Street business in a big, big way. And I just don't think there's a real understanding of what public lands value is, and I think that they would much rather get those lands sold into private hands if for no other reason, just to get them on the tax rolls. When in fact, when that happens, oftentimes that land is locked up and those favorite little hiking spots or hunting or fishing spots are gone, and they're gone forever.
Right.
Yep.
Well, yeah. And well, one thing about, you know, the five candidates, the Democratic candidates that are running for the statewide offices, all have a strong record of defending public lands. So, you know, and you cannot say the same thing for the Republicans.
That is true. No, they do. They have talked the talk and they have walked the walk, and right. And they will continue to do that.
Yeah, well, it's yes, important. And the main thing is it all winds up with we're asking people to really look at these candidates and think about it, and then, of course, vote. And when it comes down to voting, we're kind of in an interesting position in this state, since we're sort of 1 foot in and 1 foot out of mail-in voting being the way to do it. What's the current state of security in the election in Montana right now? I know you've been got dragged into or whatever, but deeply involved in the U.S. Postal Service issues.
Yeah. Well, look, I think from a Montana perspective, we're in good shape. I don't think there's going to be a lot that changes if people want to vote by mail. And when you get it, vote and turn it in and do it early. We're waiting for ours to come in the mail. And when we get it, we're going to fill it out. And we're going to drive down to Fort Benton, which is our county seat. And we're going to drop it off in the clerk and recorder's office. And that's going to be that. And so, you know, that's how we do it. I think you put it in the mail. Just give it a few extra days to get there. That's all. And if it doesn't need it, that's all right. You know, let it happen. But then if you have to vote on election day, you can. But with this pandemic and everything, it sure is a lot easier to vote by mail. I've done it, you know, for the last 4 or 5, maybe 10 cycles, actually. And quite frankly, to sit down at the table and argue with my spouse a little bit about how I'm going to vote on this initiative or that initiative is kind of fun. And so it's a good thing. And then you get it done. And then, by the way, when you get phone calls like I just got here, you don't have to pick them up because you already voted. They can't influence you. They can't do a push-pull on you and try to get you to vote for somebody that they would like to have you vote for. It's all done. It's voted. It's done, and you don't have to worry about it.
But there's still this ongoing campaign that the Republicans and the Trump administration are waging against the validity of the election, like trying to get people to question whether mail-in ballots are even, you know, dependable, reliable, that it's all rigged. And how do you think that's going to influence the outcome? Because we're obviously going to have a little waiting period before we find out the results.
Well, Vladimir Putin's got to be doing a happy dance right now.
Yeah.
He's anything that can, you know, poke holes in a democracy, that's what he's been about. And so those folks that are advocating that this election can be stolen is crazy. But let me tell you, I think that, and I can't speak for other states, I can speak for Montana. We've got great county clerks and recorders. They're gonna do their job. They're gonna do that job right. Those ballots are gonna be counted. I think the key is you just got to follow the proper protocol. If you're getting the mail-in ballot, make sure you sign where it needs to be signed. Make sure you put the ballot in the proper envelope, and make sure you just follow the directions. And get it off, get the right amount of postage on it, so they won't be held up because of any other reason, and get them in. And I think that this election probably isn't going to be called for a day or two after the 3rd of November. But then again, it might be called election night. It's hard to say. But I know regardless, there will be those that will claim victory that don't have victory secured long before the final ballots are counted. So. Look, I haven't had a race that's been called the night of election. So if it's called at 10 o'clock or noon the next day, that's no big deal. Mm-hmm. You just got to be a little bit patient. That's all.
Yeah.
But as voters, that last one, John, that was a long time for us to be holding our breath.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, hey.
Hey, I was up when it went in your favor. And,
That's good. Well, the sad part about that was is that we track those precincts pretty closely when I'm running, and we knew what was out, so we had a pretty good idea when I went to bed that night that we had won. But you never know till the last vote is counted. So,
right.
This year promises to be close. I think most of the key races are going to be really close.
I would agree with that.
And,
yeah, and your vote is going to count. So
yep, absolutely.
Get out there and vote.
And our wish is that everybody, you know, gets their head in the game and tries to you know, get the mechanics right. Vote and do it the right way.
Amen, brother.
Any other comments you want to make about the where we are right now, or just you know, closing remarks that exhort the troops to get out there and vote?
Yeah, well, this is Tuesday. We're exactly 4 weeks away from Election Day today, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
We are. And so
right.
4 weeks will go by very, very quickly. So if you have candidates that you like, get out there and support them and talk to your neighbors about them and make sure that you vote and try to get a few other folks to vote too that you know. And I think that's all really, really, really important. This is a very, very important election, and I know that oftentimes folks say, well, you know, it doesn't really matter. No, it does matter. It does matter. And what I would tell you is that there are many of men and women who have fought and who have died for our freedoms and our right to vote. And so if for no other reason, with respect to the military who have done such an incredible job since this nation's beginning, it's important you get out there and vote and make sure your voice is being heard.
Yeah, absolutely. And we want to thank you very much for spending the time talking to us. And again, I want to mention that, you know, we talked about your book. It's called Grounded, A Senator's Lessons on Winning Back Rural America. And it's well worth people's time to pick it up and read it. And you've had an interesting life, and it's in some respects, it's just beginning. So,
well, let's hope so.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nelson. Thank you, Dixie. I appreciate the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Really good to talk to Senator Tester. He's, you could call him the elder statesman, I think, at least from our state's point of view. He kind of brings a down to earth and authentic voice to a conversation which gets pretty crazy sometimes. What was your impression, Dixie?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's very, you know, very authentic. And I think it's just sort of comforting to hear a voice that's steady and reasonable. And, you know, I mean, friendly comes to mind, which isn't a way that we would describe many politicians in this political era.
No, it's to use a funny analogy, to me it's like why some people, me included, will watch episodes of The West Wing, just because that particular television show, it might not be accurate, but it feels comforting to see people behaving like normal human beings doing politics. And
yes.
he just has that kind of air about him, you know. It's he's a rural. He represents rural interests. He represents we've said authenticity. It's kind of nice to hear somebody sounds rational.
Right. Plus, you know, it's good to get his insights on how, you know, what he thinks of the candidates and the issues in Montana from this perspective of a senator in Washington, D.C. That was, I think, very interesting. People will appreciate hearing that, as well as his perspective on the sanctity of this election. I think I feel a little bit better after hearing from him.
Yeah, certainly from a Montana perspective, things could be worse. And
right.
Probably, hopefully pretty good.
Well, we got 4 weeks. We'll see.
Well, and you know, the point, basically, we mentioned it in the conversation with Tester, is that, you know, the ballots go out on Friday, and most people should have them by either Saturday or Monday, maybe Tuesday. And the issue is to take care with it. Look at them, read them, figure out what to do exactly. Get your plan. Are you going to mail it? Are you going to drive it into a clerk and recorder's office? And then do it as quickly as possible.
Right. Follow through. Make sure you get it done.
And I'd like to add that I really hope that people take it seriously, that help other people who need it. If you know somebody who might not vote, if they are maybe confused by the ballot or don't have a way of getting it to the mailbox or whatever, just help people that need help, making sure that they get their vote in. I think we all know people, elderly people, whatever, people in ill or whatever, who they could use your help. Do it, because this election really matters. Really, really matters. Anything else, Sixie?
Yes, I'd like to remind our listeners, if you want more information about the issues and the candidates running for federal and statewide offices, listen to our four-part series, The Montana 2020 General Election. In it, we cover all the candidates, both the Democrats and the Republicans, and we take a deep dive beyond their talking points and actually look at the candidates' backgrounds and their voting records to provide you with information you might not be aware of, information we think can be helpful, particularly when you're talking to your friends and family about why they should support the Democrats.
Well, thank you very much, folks, for listening in. It's kind of an honor to have the sitting senator just before the election, and I hope you enjoyed it. On behalf of A Podcast Runs Through It, I'm Nelson King, here with Dixie Hart. And as ever, be safe.
Wash your hands.
Wear your mask.
And keep your distance.